Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live. This program is recorded.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. Today is Tuesday, April 25, 2017. This is Joe Cavelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. I'm pleased to be joined today by Patrick Ryan, Larry Knuth, and Dan Williams. Gentlemen, hello. It's been a little bit since we've had our podcast, so it's good to get back in the chair again, so to speak, and join you again. So thanks very much for calling in. Pleasure to have you
with us. Good
morning,
Joe. Morning.
Good morning.
Our topic today is Milwaukee County's recent policy decision. They put out a research report back in December, which we were able to review, and kindly the group has offered to join us this morning. It's a policy regarding discontinuing hospital emergency room diversion by EMS and ambulance services. And joining us on the podcast in a little bit are some officials with Milwaukee County Office of Emergency Management and Emergency Medical Services. We surely want to take some time here at the top end of the program and talk about community paramedicine. It's making its way around the state capitol in Madison and gaining significant traction before our legislators. Patrick, do you mind offering an update on CP?
Sure, Joe. Thanks for the opportunity. Not anything real recent has occurred or developed. Again, to reiterate what's happened most recently prior to the last couple of weeks is there was a hearing held in the assembly, and it was voted out of committee unanimously. So that was a great, great sign. We are hopeful that we will have a similar experience in the Senate. Right now, the budget talks have kind of taken precedent over our bill, but we're confident that once things get settled in place a little bit there, we'll be able to resume the effort and get through the Senate and then get this signed into law. So, again, thanks to all the different stakeholders from there throughout the state who have put a lot of hours, time, effort, phone calls, all kinds of things, and getting out the message of why this is an important thing for the state of Wisconsin and for EMS and for patients. So we're real close. We just get a little bit more patient, but we're confident that things will continue to be favorable.
Excellent news, Patrick. Thank you very much for the update. We'll, of course, stay in touch with what's happening at the state capitol. It's before the Senate right now, and hopefully we'll be on the governor's desk here in the next few months, and we'll be able to celebrate this big win for the industry. As the industry really continues to evolve and look to CP and mobile integrated healthcare as some solutions in addressing local needs at the community level. Thanks for all your leadership and to those others that are a part of this effort as well. Thanks for the update, Patrick. Larry or Dan, anything else?
I don't have anything, Joe.
No, I think it's great just hearing the progress that continues on the community paramedicine. That's a delightful news.
Yes, definitely. It seems like we've been working on this a number of years, so it's nice to see the activity that's happening and actually how quickly it's happening at the state legislature. Very, very fast. So we'll continue to monitor the situation. After our break, we'll be introducing our guests here from Milwaukee County. I did want to mention to you that our guest for our May 9th podcast is going to be Madison attorney Wendy Ahrens. Unfortunately, the industry has been plagued by Medicare fraud, and Wendy's recently authored a letter regarding settlements because of Medicare fraud and penalties, actually. And so she's authored that article, and we've invited her. She's been a frequent contributor to our program, and so Wendy will be our guest on May 9th starting at 9 o'clock. This program is dedicated to Milwaukee County EMS and its announcement regarding its diversion policy. We anticipate the program running about another 25 minutes. You're listening to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli, joined by Dan Williams, Larry Knuth, and Patrick Ryan. Our program continues after this brief message.
Foundry Medical helps America's EMS and fire departments save lives by providing a full array of medical equipment and supplies. You can, of course, get national brands from Boundary, but did you know that Boundary's private label products can save you up to 20% off the price of name brand? Another way to save is when you need to update your AEDs, defibrillators, monitors, and pumps. Boundary's recertified equipment offering provides you solutions at a fraction of the new price. You can also save with Boundary's smart kitting solutions. Order custom pre-assembled kits at a cost-effective price and ensure you have the products you need on scene. With a full line of pharmaceuticals, supplies, and equipment, Boundary can help you save lives and meet your budget. Visit www.boundary.com today to see how Boundary can lend a hand.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad, or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. It's a pleasure to have you with us, and I'm also pleased to introduce our guest today, Milwaukee County EMS Medical Director, Dr. Cole Lella, Milwaukee County Emergency Management Director, Christine Westridge, and Ken Sternig with Milwaukee County Emergency Management. It's a pleasure to have you all with us today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And recently, the department issued a policy not to divert ambulance services within the county, and Milwaukee County, in understanding your information, had adopted this policy a number of years ago, but the driving force was diversion reduction based on some criteria that you established with performance improvement processes, and I think us in emergency medical services are well aware of diversion happening nationally. There are benefits to diversion. There's also disadvantages to diversion. What were some of the leading or guiding things that were a part of the diversion policy and why you looked at this based on history, but also maybe more recent times and what you were seeing?
Sure. So I'll take this question. Again, Dr. Colella here. So first of all, maybe I'd like to reshift the thinking a bit from no diversion to access to emergency care. I think the idea behind that, even though it's a bit wordsmithing, really what we're trying to do is make sure that patients have access to good, timely care. So I think that's a little bit of a word shift that I'm trying to nudge into the conversation to think about this. You know, when we think about ambulance diversion, really this is a practice that's been going on for a number of decades, and it's morphed over time. You know, in the era before EMTALA, which is the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, hospitals would often divert ambulances away from their facility to others when there were issues about payment or reimbursement or other things. So that's kind of where hospital diversion first started. And then, you know, in the 1980s, hospitals adopted that same sort of mindset when they were trying to manage hospital capacity. So when emergency departments were filled, they would look an old standby, aka diversion, to move patients to other places. And you know, I think it's important to understand we use the word emergency department diversion, but really at the end of the day, this is a hospital capacity issue. This has oftentimes very little to do with the volume in the emergency department, at least what comes in through the front door or the ambulance door of the emergency department, but rather the back door. Where do patients go when they're admitted? And oftentimes hospitals have no capacity. The reason they have no capacity is complex. But, you know, a number of economic drivers have resulted in hospitals having less and less inpatient care, and as a result, trying to shift as much care to the outpatient setting. So, you know, the perfect storm of all this is, in a sense, less capacity in the hospital and then more patients having to border in the emergency department. And, you know, a natural reaction to that is let's try to close the spigot and have patients go to other hospitals. So that's kind of what led to, you know, why hospitals diverted in a nutshell, basically. And that's been a practice that many communities across the country have been doing for decades. You know, I think with Milwaukee County, when we started looking at this, we really wanted to think about, you know, what are the guiding principles for us as we help to ensure that patients have good access to emergency care. And really, at the end of the day, we thought both EMS and hospitals want to make sure that we partner together to provide good quality and safe care for people. And the second part of that is really patients have a right to choose where they want to get their care. This is just a fundamental patient autonomy issue. And at the end of the day, we want to make sure that when they make these informed choices, they can do so understanding that it's within their right to do so. You know, remember, every decision, health decision that patients make, there's issues about safety and quality and economic risk that accompany them. So for us, we wanted to make sure that we tried to line up, you know, what does the patient want, and how can we provide that service in a way that serves the public as the primary, as our primary customer. Of course, we work closely with health systems, and that's important as well. Does that help with the question, Joe?
Yes, it does. Absolutely. Thank you, Dr. Colella. Appreciate that very much. How did Milwaukee County coordinate this among paramedics and hospitals, being such a robust system and having really used the diversion model a number of years? It had to be a significant paradigm shift.
It certainly was a shift. As you can imagine, I mean, we're the largest metro area. We have 14 acute care hospitals roughly in our receiving hospital agreements. So, you know, this was a monumental shift. But, you know, the cliche about eating an elephant, right? And I think we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. But, you know, I think to answer the question about kind of the coordination of this, you know, we were very deliberate about that as well. And
this is Ken. Thank you, Larry and Dan, Patrick and Joe for having me on. So we, as you can imagine, being a large EMS system, messaging out our change in policy took a number of steps. And so we first started to communicate with fire department leadership, both the chief officers of the EMS agencies, as well as then the EMS kind of liaisons. And Dr. Colella will speak in just a minute about some of the steps that we took to progressively ramp up a full diversion. But as we started to do this, we messaged things out to the EMS leadership, and then through some numbered notices to the field providers of the communities that have contractual relationships with Milwaukee County, 12 fire departments in the area, we provided some a number of notice explanations to the providers. We handled this also then in some briefings during the quarterly refresher classes, so the video conference refresher classes that we had to the providers, and explained rationales to the policy changes and how they should handle things. And then dealt with the Milwaukee County Medical Society, which has a subgroup of both EMS physicians and emergency department physicians, and message things out to them. We did work with the nurse manager group to have them message things out to their nursing and ancillary staff about the policy changes. And then probably most importantly is we developed relationships and were able to work with the chief executive and the chief medical officers of the healthcare systems to get some of their insight. And I think Dr. Colella will speak to support that they had and wishes that those CEOs had as to how we should best manage a diversion or a limited diversion changes as we're rolling into that. So it really was a multi-pronged approach. We needed to hit a lot of different entities to get their feedback as we progress in rolling out the different phases, as well as their expectations, and set up some means of doing some measurements.
There's Larry, I know that your service being in Milwaukee with Paratech Ambulance was impacted by this decision. What were some of your thoughts around this, impressions, and from your perspective with Paratech Ambulance.
Well, first, I wanted to applaud Dr. Colello and the OEM office on their efforts in this regard, because as they've all, I guess the tip of the spear was always the being patient-centered in their approach to the Milwaukee County EMS system, and this really reflected that words were really transformed into action. I think it worked real well for all providers. I know in the executive summary it doesn't reflect private numbers, but we did experience the same benefits. We no longer had to drive to further hospitals. Then patients did get to their patient medical homes. We had a happier crews, happier dispatchers that didn't have to monitor the closure status. So it just all in all, starting with the patient and through all the providers in Milwaukee County, it really was 180 degree from what we were used to. And we just had a scratch in our head. How did we ever get to those massive diversions in the first place when this seemingly transitioned and was accepted so well by, as Ken had mentioned, the chief medical officers, executives of the hospitals, as well as the field personnel. You know how we don't like change.
Actually, Joe, if I can add on to that, I talked initially about kind of the guiding principles that made it feel like this was the right thing for us to do. So, this actually started back in 2013. So this was this took time to initiate this kind of change, and we did it in a way that was measured and logical from a patient standpoint. But, I think to Larry's point, what we noticed happening and what was the driving force or the catalyst behind change was in the era of diversion, we noticed that whenever one hospital went on diversion, then like a domino, all the other hospitals surrounding them would also go on diversion, and patients would be bounced around from hospital to hospital. We noticed, and we know for a fact, that patients were very unsatisfied when they weren't brought to the places that took care of them. We also know that, as Larry mentioned, ambulances were driving further away from their communities, and most importantly, patients that were sick were denied access to the closest emergency care. So what happened is, and all of us as EMS providers would agree, patients would refuse ambulance transport because they wanted to go to a hospital that wasn't diversion, so they refused the ambulance and drove themselves to the hospital. And I think for me, the tipping point I can recall clearly was an elderly woman who was having acute coronary syndrome who turned an ambulance away and drove herself to a hospital because she only wanted care at that place. And I felt like at that point, the system needed to focus on the individual patient. And really, we had excellent partnership with our hospitals. I can't emphasize, we could have never done this without the hospital engagement. So what we
excellent.
Did starting... Yeah, so starting in 2013, we actually did this in a way that we thought made good, logical, patient-centered approach. And really the first phase of this was patients that had ROSC from sudden cardiac arrest. Pre-diversion, they would go to a hospital. It could be three or four hospitals away. We felt like that wasn't patient-centered. So anybody that had resuscitation from a sudden cardiac arrest went to the closest receiving interventional hospital. And again, that was sort of a measured approach, and all hospitals agreed with that. I think it made sense. The next phase of this, now we're going into about the middle to end of 2014, was patients that were having time-sensitive diagnosis, like stroke and STEMI, would be brought to the closest stroke or STEMI hospital. Again, that made sense because the evidence is really clear that if ambulance diversion led to prolonged intervention times, we didn't feel like that was patient-centered. Hospitals agreed, and so phase one and phase two was the low-hanging patient-centered fruit. We picked it. Hospitals won. Patients won. We won. And it was perfect. phase three. Now, this was really the real initiative, and this is, you know, essentially making sure that patients had access to any emergency department that they chose. So that was the bigger step. That was the one that really required a lot of work and negotiation with all of our hospitals. And, you know, I think when we frame this so eloquently as a patient-centered, patient safety initiative, I think hospitals understood it. And they want to be good partners to their patients and their communities. And they have done incredibly well to prepare for this. Imagine the amount of effort it takes for a large health system to turn themselves around at every level of service they provide and think about the throughput to understand how to open the back door of the ER and allow patients to have access to the hospital. And this was really amazing. So what we did with this, this phase we planned with about a year's worth, a little bit more than a year's worth of notice. And we basically set a start date of April 1st of last year. Now, hospitals were very wise. They knew this was coming, and many of them were early adopters long before the policy went into effect. So, you know, hospitals would choose to no longer go on diversion, even though the diversion policy hadn't taken into effect. So, essentially, we had a bit of an easing into this, which I think actually worked out very well. So we could have gone cold turkey. There was a drop-dead date, but by the drop-dead date, almost every health system was engaged and ready to go. So that was how we unfolded the process.
And, Joe, then that kind of leads into what do we find from it, and did we get any kind of pushback? And I think most of the EMS providers really had said to us anecdotally that they didn't witness any real changes. As Dr. Colella had mentioned, the hospitals were well prepared for it because they had phased into it. I think the EMS providers recognized a slow transition into this, and I'll be interested in if Larry has some further comments on it. But we really did not get pushbacks. We looked at the wait times or the offloading of patient times to hospitals. And in the older NMSIS data set, it's a little bit hard to quantify and to measure exactly. I think the new NMSIS set will allow us a better metrics for that. But really what we recognize is that we did not see that the paramedic units were having an increase in the time between at hospital and getting back into service. We'd hear a few anecdotal reports here and there that they may have needed to wait a few more minutes to have the hospital find a bed and that stuff, but it really was not the significant increase of times that you hear in some areas around the country where it's a half hour, 45 minutes, an hour before the ambulance crew can even get the patient off the cot into a hospital bed. So we really didn't see a lot of that. We did look at our ED arrivals pre and post, and the amount of volume that the EMS agencies were bringing to the hospitals. And as Larry identified, this was really only data from the municipalities within Waukee County. It did not involve any of the private ambulance transports. So we did see a bit of a difference of the EMS average arrival per month pre and post diversion. We looked at the year prior to and then the year after the diversion. It ranged, some hospitals actually decreased in their percent of average percent per month, 3 to 7%, and a couple hospitals we had increases of 14 to 15%. Looking further at those hospitals, it had to do with the level one trauma center, so there's a lot of variables as to why those EMS arrivals increased to that institution over the year. And then one of the major cardiac institutions also had an increase. So I think, you know, we also have to work with our hospital health system partners and identify types of patients that increase during those periods of time and things, you know, marketing and et cetera, that happens within the hospital. Did that impact the ED volume or not is something for us to look at. When we look at the overall percent of EMS volume in the EDs pre and post, the numbers really stayed the same. Again, a couple institutions, they went down, and a couple institutions, they went up. But across the board, the percent of ED volume that was EMS patient-related really was consistent both pre and post. So, you know, a couple of the hospitals, when we worked with them afterwards, recognized that their ED volume had gone up. And when we tried looking at was there a direct cause and effect to EMS arrivals to that institution and the increase of patients, we did not find that. So their ED volume may have gone up, but it was not necessarily EMS transport related. So as a whole, the our kind of conclusion right now is that the no diversion policy really did not impact the ED volume. We have a couple of limitations to some of our data, and we can talk about those in some of our next steps.
And actually, if I can look at this, there's two things that I think are important for listeners to understand when we implemented this. The first one was the fact that there were no patient safety events reported to us through the hospital system in our normal QA process that was a result of ambulance diversion. So I think when hospitals, naysayers say, oh, this is going to be bad for patients because ERs will be busy, there's no experience that we've had here. And then if you look at the national literature on this, that pans out. So there were no patient safety events. But the important thing I think it's that you should also understand is that our community had an additional almost 5,000 hours of access to emergency departments that would have otherwise been closed a year prior to that. So when you think about this from an access standpoint, you know, this change really increased the availability to care to the community. And really at the end of the day, that was our mission. So I think it was, you know, with the limitations that we recognize and the data not being perfect, I think it was quite successful.
Excellent points and perspective. Thank you very much. I'm curious to know, and maybe Dan and Patrick can elaborate, Dan being over in Green Bay and Patrick in Madison, are either of those systems, or maybe both of them are, on a diversion-type policy?
This is Patrick. You know, that issue comes up periodically. We tend to see it more in the flu season for whatever reason. I guess it kind of makes some sense. But also, you know, in being kind of in the same boat as Larry, being on a little bit on the outside of the system, being on the interfacility side, my perspective has been that it hasn't really happened in the last couple of years. It was a big topic probably around the time that I think this Milwaukee County project kicked off, but we have not experienced it as of late as a real issue here in the Dane County area.
This is Dan. Yeah, up in the Green Bay region, you know, being from Door County, that anything that is of any serious consequence has to go to Green Bay. There's really never been any real diversion. There'd be an occasional, you know, for an hour here or there, but it was very, very rare that you had diversion situations in the Green Bay region.
Sure. Okay, very good. Has Milwaukee County consulted with other entities in Wisconsin or maybe nationally based on the successful outcomes that you've experienced thus far?
So we're in the process of developing a paper for this, so we want to be able to publish the results of this. So that's one of the academic goals of this.
Excellent perspective. We will post as a part of the podcast the report that we were provided here on initial outcomes from the reduction policy with diversions and realigning patient-centered EMS delivery to avoid diversions. As a part of the podcast, very interesting read, and congratulations to you all on what you've done to address your system, to improve your system, and realign it for a better-centered patient care. Christine, Director Westwich, we haven't heard from you yet. We surely want to give you an opportunity to speak as well, and maybe the lead-in to that is what's next for Milwaukee County EMS as the director.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. I appreciate it. You know, one thing that we learned from implementing this diversion policy was really our network and contacts with the market leaders of the 14 acute receiving hospitals here in Milwaukee County is perhaps that those relationships needed to be stronger and needed to be toughened up. So that's something that we're looking at immediately. We're having and hosting meetings. We're looking at some critical things like a data dictionary. Are we all calling and defining a specific vernacular the same? A second thing we're looking at is Y-Track and really looking to use that as its intended use, trying to ensure that the privates are using it, of course, and then looking to use it for also treatment beds that might be available for opioid addiction. That's something new, should be forthcoming in the next year or so. And then lastly, I'd say we're really looking to establish this relationship to really have a little bit more clout in some things that we're trying to implement, not only looking at Milwaukee County ordinances, but also the EMS Council and what are our duties, what are our authorities, recommendations that we make to the community as a whole and ensuring that we're doing our due diligence on that. So having a partnership with these market leaders, again, of the health systems, I think will be really important for us to reestablish ourselves in the community with new, I'd say, apps and technologies, new rules and regulations as well.
Very good. Thank you for the overview. Was there anything else that you wish to share, either with this or other things happening in Milwaukee County EMS?
You know, I think overall we're really doing an entire technology upgrade of the whole Milwaukee County EMS system. You know, we've implemented new supply ordering. We're looking at ZoCloud, actually implementing that as we speak. Also looking at, of course, Nemesis Cube, the CARES Registry, I think, which we already mentioned, AHA, hoping for the Gold Plus Mission Lifeline Award this year. And then we're really establishing a benchmarking consortium here in EMS. That's a goal for 2018. And we're looking at 5 cities in the nation, you know, and this could change, but right now, just a cursory look, we're showing, you know, Charlotte, Columbus, Houston, Seattle, perhaps, as cities that are like-minded with our county, and really looking at the data sets that already exist in CARES, AHA, and the Nemesis Cube, and seeing, can we rank ourselves against these other 5 cities and see where we stand? And then try to achieve more once we have our initial ranking. So that'll be exciting, and we'll keep you posted on that.
Terrific. We sure invite the conversation, too, as things progress, and we sure invite you to come back and join us on a future podcast. Well, Dr. Colella, Ken Sterling, and Director Westridge, thank you very much for being a part of today's program and sharing all the information and highlights from the very successful program that you changed to be more patient-centered care through reduction in diversions. It's a great conversation. We're pleased to know of the outcomes, and we want to send a special shout-out and thanks to all of you. Thanks very much for being on the program today.
Thanks for the opportunity. We welcome it.
Yes, and we sure invite you back at a future point in time when there's more exciting news to share and other developments that you're working on. But best wishes in your work, and thank you again for your time. And Ken, thank you for helping organize today's discussion.
You're welcome, Joe. Thank you.
Take care, everyone.
Patrick, Dan, and Larry, thank you very much for being a part of the show today. Was there anything else that you had before we wrap things up?
No, very interesting discussion. And go ahead, Dan. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I just wanted to just say again, another quality job by Milwaukee County EMS to really look at all the aspects of issues and keep the patient in mind. You know, not all healthcare systems do that, and I just applaud them once again for being very thorough with their research and allowing us to share in it.
Nothing to add for me.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you very much for joining us today on today's program. Larry, Dan, Patrick, thank you for being along today as well, and for Patrick sharing the CP update. The next EMS Live in Wisconsin program is Tuesday, May 9, starting at 9. Again, our guest is Madison attorney Wendy Ahrens with the law firm Godfrey and Pawn, and we'll be discussing with Wendy her recent article that she authored regarding Medicare fraud in the ambulance industry, something to be aware of, to be conscious of, to be, not to say on the lookout for, but definitely to know what the rights and wrongs are. We just don't want anybody to get into trouble. EMS Live is streamed live via the phone and internet the second and fourth Tuesday every month. Today's program was recorded and it will be available on the PAW website at paaw.us for demand, on-demand playback. Thank you very much for joining us today. Our next program again is May 9th. We appreciate our guest time and information, a very informative discussion today. And thank you again for being with us. On behalf of the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, this is Joe Cavelli. Have a great day.
EMS Live is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, which is dedicated to healthy, sustainable ambulance and emergency medical services delivery in Wisconsin. Program comments can be emailed to emslive@paaw.us. That's emslive@paaw.us. Thank you for listening.